Phil Lyman, former San Juan County Commissioner, previous chair of the Seven County Infrastructure Coalition, a Utah legislator, a CPA in Blanding, Utah, and now Republican gubernatorial candidate. Phil Lyman is a champion of access to public lands. Many might remember that in 2014, as commissioner of San Juan County, he famously protested an OHV trail closure by organizing an OHV ride on a trail that the BLM had closed to motorized use. Consequently, Mr. Lyman experienced the heavy hand of federal government as a result of that. Phil Lyman, a champion of protecting state sovereignty and maintaining open access to public lands. Good evening, I'm Steve Evans with News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVL. Phil Lyman is in Vernal Friday for a town hall meeting. He is running against incumbent Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Thank you, Phil Lyman, for joining us on the air this evening.
Well, thank you. And I love that introduction. You hit on some really important issues there to me. So thanks, Steve.
Well, public lands are important to the citizens here in northeastern Utah, as they are throughout the Intermountain West. Evans Family Media reported on Wednesday that the Bureau of Land Management will update their Dinosaur North plan next year in 2025, which could potentially close 208 miles of OHV trails in Uinta County. In 2023, the BLM closed 317 miles of OHV trails west of Moab and Grand County. Now, according to Clay Crozier, legal counsel for the Public Lands Policy Coordinating Office, Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, or SUWA, also has their sights set on Uinta and Duchesne County. And he said it's anticipated that the Dinosaur North plan will be the first, followed by the Book Cliffs and Nine Mile Canyon in Duchesne County. Phil Lyman, throughout your career, you've been very active in the protection of our public lands. How great of a threat is the recent moves under the Biden's administration's BLM?
Well, the rats are scurrying because they see that their ship is sinking. I don't think the Biden administration is going to be around for another term. So you've got the head of the Bureau of Land Management, Tracy Stone Manning, and our deputy, Nada Culver, and they're trying to get everything done before they're kicked out of office. It's really appalling, honestly, that they can do this with a straight face, as if it's policy, as if it's protection. It is nothing but environmental activism. It's who they are. Nada Culver, former director of the Wilderness Society's BLM Action Center, which was to force BLM. They were the ones that were suing the BLM up until they became in charge of it, trying to shut down all the cattle grazing, all of these things. Steve, honestly, this is like, it's a travesty. If people would wake up and look at what's actually happening here, I hope they would be really disgusted by it.
The Biden administration has been accused of weaponizing federal agencies like the BLM, the FBI, et cetera, et cetera. You've actually experienced some of that. What is your feeling about the federal government agencies being weaponized to target conservative opponents?
Yeah, so this pattern, and this goes back to the Declaration of Independence that says when you observe a pattern of usurpations and abuses always in pursuit of a single object, which is to deprive the people of their rights and their liberties, something to that effect, then it's their right, their duty to stand up to it. And we've seen that. So when you go back to the Grand Staircase National Monument and the massive taking of all of those resources, all that coal resource, then you go to the Bears Ears National Mine, which was the taking of all the uranium resources and all the rare earth minerals, and they can say it's to protect artifacts or to preserve wilderness, but it's funded by globalists who are trying to corner the market on minerals and things, and we're just sitting here pretending like somehow it's a legitimate conservation effort, and it's not. It's a takeover of everything, of all of our resources, and so I saw that happening as a county commissioner. Well, as just a citizen, is what motivated me to run for county commissioner, and I stood up against him, and I ended up going to jail for it. And these people are not—they're not nice people.
Now, tell us about your experience in jail. What did you actually do that caused you to be arrested? And there were others that were arrested along with you, other good citizens of Blanding, Utah, correct?
Yeah, we were charged with a conspiracy misdemeanor. Or misdemeanor conspiracy to trespass, and what that equates to whenever the federal government charges you with conspiracy, that just means you're going to jail. In our case, it was Facebook posts and likes. And those Facebook posts and likes were related to, like, girls' basketball and things like that. But the BLM said, but you could see the conspiracy starting to take shape. And it was just, the whole thing is just weaponization is exactly the word. It's saying we're going to take out a county commissioner because he's opening his mouth and he's telling the truth. If you don't know what you're talking about, they don't care. But if you know what you're talking about, they come after you.
That's chilling.
Well, it is chilling, and that's the objective. You know, the U.S. Attorney's Office. They said we want to send a message to county commissioners that even county commissioners are not above the law. And sadly, what they did is send a message that they'll go after innocent people, whether they've broken the law or not. So,
what laws, Phil Lyman, are in place right now, currently, to protect public access to public lands? For example, what is RS-2477?
Yeah, so RS-2477, that stands for Revised Statute 2477, passed in the 1860s, that said the right-of-way for construction of highways across public land that weren't otherwise reserved is granted. And that gives the states and the counties authority over the roads that are on the ground. And the Supreme Court is really clear. Those roads belong to the county and the state. They do not belong to the BLM. But BLM comes in and assumes that they do, and then they close them. And then they say, well, if you want those open, you have to go to court and adjudicate the roads. And until you do, they're going to remain closed. And I just passed a bill. The very last bill that went through the Senate this last year says any road that has not been adjudicated, the state will take the position that it's still a valid and existing road until it's adjudicated. So it turns that whole thing kind of over on its head and says, well, you can go through the process, but you can't put the counties in a position where they have to sue to get it reopened. You have to sue, basically, to get it closed.
So back up just a minute. You, as a county commissioner, were being confronted by the heavy hand of the federal government. And when you became a state legislature, you actually turned that around and held them more accountable. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. And the RS-2477 is such a key component in protecting our lands from closure, because Congress can designate wilderness if it's a roadless area. And if it's not roadless, it does not qualify. So if you're an environmentalist, you say, well, we can fix that. We'll just close all the roads. Voila, we have roadless area, and we're going to shut down. We're going to now turn it into wilderness, and we're going to shut down all the extractive industries that are there. So, yeah.
So they're just going to come out and close the roads down or the trails down or access down and say, you know, take it to court, and good luck with that. I hope you have the resources to do it, right?
Yeah. And like you'd mentioned, Labyrinth Canyon and down in Moab, the 317 miles. Now you got this happening in Uinta County, and they will keep doing it between now and the end of the Biden regime. Because they can. They don't go through the due process. They don't go through the public process that is required. It's unconstitutional. It's against their own regulations. It's a violation of FLIPMA. Yet they just kind of do it and say, well, what are you going to do about it? You know. And if you stand up, they will target you. They will come after you. And not just the BLM, but the IRS and the CIA and the FBI and your local school districts. I mean, it really has it has these tentacles that really reach into all areas of our lives, especially when you bring in entities like Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. They really are pulling the strings, and they do it at a local level. They go after people's businesses, after their families. I mean, I've watched it happen. I've seen people's lives just destroyed by environmentalists. It is chilling. It's horrible.
If you're just joining us, we are visiting with Phil Lyman. Phil Lyman is a gubernatorial candidate, Republican, for the Utah governor seat this year. Phil, I wanted to ask you, what can the public do to respond? A public comment, organized protest, OHV rise on closed trails? What can we do?
Okay, now I don't want to get a conspiracy going here.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one that will go to jail again. And actually, if it came to that,
I'll go with you. How's that?
Okay, yeah. I would hope it would be the governor that would go to jail. That's who should stand up and say, you know, not in my state, we're not doing this. But right now we've got this law on the books that says that those trails, if they restrict access until it's adjudicated, they are violating the law. And maybe that gives people a little bit of courage. And again, I'm not encouraging people to go out and just drive down these closed trails, because you're going to be facing off between the state and the federal. But in this situation, versus when I did a similar thing, state law will be behind you. It has to. The legislature will be behind you, because they just passed a bill saying that they would do that. So it should be sheriffs that go out and, you know, challenge a closure. It should be legislators that challenge a closure. But in absence of any of that, it should be citizens that challenge a closure.
Phil Lyman, what does the future hold for access to our public lands if President Biden gets reelected?
So you've got a president who's exhibited king-like desires, you know, to just wave their hand and declare massive wilderness. And it's not just, unfortunately, it's not just Democrats. Both bodies seem to think that the president has this unlimited authority. But the Biden administration, their objective is the Paris Climate Accord. With the Bears Ears Management Plan that just came out, they say right on the front end, you know, like, given the fact that climate change is the existential threat of our generation, and the fact that cows are the biggest emitters of methane gas, we're going to manage to, you know, to solve that problem. Which so right on the front, they say we're getting rid of cattle grazing. If they were honest, they would acknowledge that cattle grazing is probably saving our forests, not endangering them, saving our grasslands for sure. Sorry, this is a long way to answer your short question. I think what's in store under the Biden administration is really bad policy that leads to really bad outcomes. The desertification of our grasslands, the destruction of our industries, the destabilization of our country, the increase of our national debt, the undermining of our energy sector, and basically a problem so big that the only solution will, in their mind, will be a one-world government. And that's the punchline.
Do you believe that's the end goal?
Yes. Yeah, there's no question. And when you look at the big powers that are pushing this, for example, our coal-fired power plants, you know, we're shutting down coal-fired power plants, and Utah is saying, oh, please, please, I guess we have to do it because the federal government says we have to. So we're transitioning to hydrogen. We're doing all these things. And what I said on the floor of the House, I said, this is not a war on coal. It's a war on America, because the very countries that are pushing America to shut down their coal-fired power plants are building one a week in China, and Russia is going all in on natural gas and oil while they're pushing us to shut down through the World Economic Forum, through the United Nations. And, you know, honestly, Steve, a couple of years ago, even people would be like, oh, that sounds like a conspiracy theorist. Now people recognize that it's not a conspiracy theory. It's absolutely the agenda. It's absolutely the plan. And any state, well, maybe I'll say it this way. If we expect the federal government to save us from this travesty, we're relying on the wrong people. They're not going to save us from national debt. It's going to be states that do it, and it's going to be under the direction of strong governors, which right now I don't think Utah has a strong governor in this place. He's too fond of President Biden and his policies.
In your opinion, speaking of Governor Cox, is he doing enough to protect the public's access to our public lands?
A lot of it's messaging and signaling, and he's done everything to signal that he's lockstep with the Biden administration, whether it's the response to January 6th by shutting down our own state capitol and bringing in the National Guard as if we were under threat, if it's his response to COVID, the masking, the vaccinations, all of those things were just lockstep with the Biden administration. When it comes to public lands, he can talk tough. You can talk about the lawsuits that we have in place, but the lawsuits are not moving forward because they don't have the political push from the governor himself. So as a governor, I would push those lawsuits. I would simply, take a chapter out of Kristi Noem's book and just say, yeah, thanks for the suggestion. We're not doing it. Come and sue us. And that's the, you know, God bless Texas right now, because they're doing that with immigration. And whether it's an invasion of your southern borders or an invasion of your public lands or your public schools, states that don't stand up to that, in my estimation, are not states. They are administrative subunits of the federal government. That's not what the people signed on for. That's not what the Constitution gives us.
Phil Lyman, speaking of Governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, he's been criticized for his actions to protect the state from the influx of illegal aliens along his border. Should states be able to arrest, detain, and deport a migrant at the nation's border? Should a state be able to do that?
A state has a right and a duty to protect its citizens from criminals. So if someone wants to come into Utah and bringing fentanyl with them and organized crime and cartel activity, for anybody at the state level to accept the fact that we can't hold those people because we're not ICE certified, Immigration and Customs Enforcement certified, is to undermine everything that a state stands for. Sorry, that was a convoluted answer to a short question again, but yes.
I love your passion.
Yeah.
You mentioned
you're pushing all these buttons.
I'm pushing lots of buttons. You mentioned Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE. Now, they have declared, as I understand it, Utah as a sanctuary state.
Yeah.
That shocked me when I heard that earlier today. Consequently, more and more are motivated to come into the state for support. What impact is this having on Utah? For example, I understand there's 193,000 illegal immigrants in the state of Utah currently, and it's estimating to cost the state about $4,500 per month per illegal immigrant. And, you know, I can do the math on that. It's up to about $9 million annually.
$900 million.
$900 million. Yes, I'm sorry. What are your thoughts about that? Is Utah facing a crisis? Immigration crisis?
Yeah. And we'll always have a certain amount of illegal immigration or people that are fleeing their countries, whatever. And there's always going to be a certain amount of that. I don't think you can get it to zero, but we have policies that turn it into a business and into a crisis. And for Utah, that is saying, well, we can't push back against ICE and detain people even if they have committed a crime in Utah. And I want to clarify something really, really, really important here. The sheriffs are amazing, wonderful people. They do their job, and my hat's off to them. And they do detain non-citizens up to 72 hours. But at the end of 72 hours, it's illegal for them, according to federal law, to detain them. And so the judges release them. If they've done something really, really heinous and they're, you know, an obvious, you know, lethal threat to their fellow men, then they, you know, maybe ICE will do a hold on that and say, you know, hold them for longer, or they'll take them themselves. But in the meantime, because we don't detain, because we don't push back on the federal government, we get this sanctuary state status, the signal to all illegal immigrants who have nefarious motives is that Utah is a pretty sweet place to go, because they're not going to keep you in jail. They might arrest you, but you'll be back out in 72 hours. And that sends the message. So that's the policy that's like, oh, now not only do we not fix the problem, we are the one state where all the nefarious activity, or much of the nefarious activity, wants to come.
I understand that the recent state legislature provided a lot of money in the budget to address the state's homeless problem, primarily in the Salt Lake City area. I also understand that many of these migrants that are coming in are occupying the housing that was set aside to address the homeless problem in Utah. Do we have the money to support these 193,000 and growing illegal immigrants in the state of Utah?
Well, if we do, it's because we're taking a huge amount of federal funds that then handcuff us to their policies. I mean, our budget has gone from $22 billion to $30 billion in the last 3 years, and 29% of that last year was federal money. So we're selling our economy, you know, our children's safety downtown, for federal money, and then that money goes to, you know, wherever it goes to into people's pockets. But no, the federal government doesn't have money. They're hugely in debt. The state is too dependent on federal money, and it's really bad policy, and it favors corruption. It turns into pay to play economy where those that are willing to play the game get all the benefits, and those that speak out against it just get, pushed aside. They don't participate.
Well, let's, in the closing moments of our conversation here, let's talk about you. Why are you running for governor? What changes are you hoping to make if you become governor?
Well, the things we've been talking about really hit the nail on the head, and I really appreciate it. I say sometimes that these are not platform issues with me. This is why I'm running for governor. I'm so discouraged by the collusion and the weaponization of federal government. I'm really discouraged in Utah, by the influence that the large corporation lobbyists have on policy. And that policy that rolls out is done with some motivation other than to preserve the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, which was what government's supposed to do. So I see it was drifting far away from a Republican form of government. I see a lot of other people feeling the same way. I think a shift is coming. I think it's a time for a decision to be made that's going to impact us dramatically right now and future generations. I don't see any time to postpone making a change at the state level with the governor's office.
What message would you like to give to a state delegate who may be listening right now?
I'll address the signature gathering part of this because I did check the box to gather signatures. And my logic on that was that 4 years ago, we saw the caucus really go sideways. In fact, there was no caucus meetings. There was no convention meetings. There was no town hall meetings because of COVID. The only person on the air was Governor Cox as lieutenant governor and the COVID czar. And so all those people that in good faith said that they were going to go convention only found out they really didn't have access to the delegates. And I thought, I'm not going to give up the option until we see what happens with the caucus at night. And we saw the caucus go, I think it was a fairly clean caucus. And we've done some polling since then and decided, okay, I think we're in a good shape, in a good position for the delegates to do what the delegates are wanting to do and can do. And so we dropped our efforts to gather signatures. So what I want to tell the delegates is thank you so much. You know, honest people have rights too, and you're standing up for your neighbors, and I know it comes at a sacrifice of time and attention, and I really appreciate that.
All right. Phil Lyman, who's running for Utah governor against Spencer Cox on the Republican ticket. If we wanted to learn more about you, Phil Lyman, where could we go?
I've got a good website. It's Lyman for Utah, and that's Lyman, FORUtah.com. We've got a lot of town hall meetings that we're doing, trying to get all of our content on our website. We really want people to connect with us. It's not so much about volunteering or even donating as much as it is. We want a movement. We want people to understand what's at stake here. And I think as people start to open their eyes, they'll be more inclined to take action. So, yeah, website's a good spot.
All right. Phil Lyman, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know how busy you are, and we appreciate you taking the time to reach out to the citizens here in northeastern Utah.
Yeah, it's only a pleasure, and I really appreciate talking to you. Thank you for the invitation.
We hope to hear from you back again soon. Thank you, Phil Lyman.
Okay. See ya.
This is Steve Evans on News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL.